the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello, happy new season, and welcome back to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, great to be back for another year. We've held off fierce competition from a number of Celtic podcasts that wanted to sign you on a full-time basis, but the band is back together for 2022.
Yeah, it is. I couldn't leave. I had a couple of trials, but no, this is the place for me. Thank you for the new contract, and it's great to be back for our 10th year, or your 10th year, I should say.
Yes, it is, and thanks very much to Okinawa Aussie, Jeff Osborne himself, for bringing this to my attention. And yeah, my math skills were in full effect here in the Patreon-only line group. Jeff pointed out that, yes, we had started all the way back in 2012, and this might just be our 10th season. Of course, I did take a break for the birth of my second child in 2017, so that threw me off. But yes, this is the start of the 10th year of the J-Talk podcast. It's also the 30th year of the J-League. So yes, milestones all over the shop here for us. If you happen to be a new listener of the podcast and new to Japanese football, firstly, welcome aboard, and we hope you will enjoy our little pod. We thought we might introduce ourselves off the top again to any new listeners who might be joining us for the first time. So yeah, my name is Ben Maxwell. I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and now a resident of Japan for over 20 years, a long-suffering and pretty much eternally pessimistic FC Tokyo supporter. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk about one of the most exciting leagues in the world for the past decade. That's me. Sam, how about yourself? Please introduce yourself to any new listeners that might be tuning in.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm Sam Robson, and I work for Football Radar, a kind of statistics company. I've covered the J League since 2015, I want to say, starting on J2, which I still think is the best league in the world, and then moving on to J1 later in that year. As you might be able to tell by my terrible accent, I'm from the West Midlands in England, and yeah, I've just grown to love Japanese football. Ben kindly had me on as a semi-regular guest from 2015 onwards, starting with an epic 4-4 draw between Shonan and Kawasaki. And yeah, I think this is my third season now as a full-time co-host. It's been an absolute pleasure to be on, and I just love the opportunity to talk about Japanese football for an hour and a half to 2 hours each week. And hopefully you'll join us for this season. It's looking like another really exciting one.
Most definitely. So yes, welcome along for the ride, everyone. It's we're slightly biased, but yes, we love the J-League, and we do believe it's pretty much got it all for any supporter of football wherever around the world that you come from. So you'll hear from us basically every week throughout the season, but also we'll be rotating in our regular guests who hail from different parts of the world as well, and to all have all share our love for the J-League. Some are club specific correspondents, while others are working for the mainstream media. And we appreciate all of our guests who have joined us over the years, now well over 50 in number. And they all give up their time, as I said, to talk about this league that we all love. While you're on this feed, you'll also be able to enjoy the J-Talk Extra Time podcast that is hosted by John Steele and Stuart Smith, and that covers both J2 and J3. Speaking of J3, we had Mike Innes come on board as the host of J-Talk Short Corner last season, and Mike did a terrific job in his first season aboard the good ship J-Talk, rounding up the third tier of the Japanese game. So yes, we've got it pretty much all covered from top to bottom when it comes to the J-League action on a week-to-week basis. So yes, if you are a new listener, we welcome you aboard, and we hope you will enjoy what we have to offer and what this fantastic league has to offer as well. So, Sam, you mentioned it before. Yes, it's going to be a fascinating season, the 2022 J1 campaign. And in the weeks to come before the big kickoff on Friday, the 18th of February, when Kawasaki will host FC Tokyo in the season's curtain raiser. We will be previewing all 18 top flight clubs in detail, but on this, our first episode of the year, we thought we'd ease ourselves in slowly and just get our feet wet a little by talking about some slightly unfortunate news for a lot of supporters of different clubs, and they are the major outs from the league. And we've seen another exodus of players leaving the J-League and heading to Europe. And I mentioned Celtic right off the top in the intro, and they obviously have well and truly got their money's worth with Kyogo Furuhashi moving to Parkhead, and have made a very big splash into the market in this winter by signing three big names from the J-League, and they are looking set to make their debut pretty much today, isn't it?
Yeah, possibly. They play Hibernian tonight as we record. I think Maeda is quite likely to start. Hatate fairly likely. And hopefully Idiguchi is also there as well. And we can see three debuts. I think last time we were recording, these were all kind of heavily rumoured, a little bit mixed news on Idiguchi. But yeah, all three came in New Year's Eve for Celtic. It was it's really exciting times for Japanese supporters, I suppose, with three of the league's best exports going to Celtic, joining Kyogo Furuhashi, and hopefully they can all get a lot of game time playing Europe as well. And if they have like even half the impact that Kyogo Furuhashi has had at Celtic, they'll be terrific signings. And as you say, the great value for money I think they'll get at Celtic, because one of my bugbears again was the prices that they've managed to get these players for. And we'll go on, I think, with the Kawasaki preview later on in these preview pods, in terms of fees that I got for Hatate when compared to, say, what they're paying for Chanatip. But hopefully Japan can improve that. But there's three players that the J-League has lost, and they're not the only ones. We've lost quite a lot of quality from the league this season, which is great to see that the league can produce such quality players. But it's also a little bit disappointing when so many good players do leave the league.
Yes, most definitely. So three big names heading to Celtic, and plenty of others heading to Belgium. But before we touch on them, I'm sure you were asked a number of questions about the three new Celtic players. So now that you've had time to think about it, and these players have obviously been practicing and training under Ange Postecoglou. So I'm not sure how closely you follow Celtic, of course, but are you expecting these especially Maeda and Hatate to become regulars under Ange Postecoglou?
I think Maeda, I think, will go straight in. I mean, they've got a lot of injuries that helps Maeda to, and he'll be kind of thrust in. But I do expect Maeda to be probably a first choice player. Hatate is battling with David Turnbull, I'd say, for that position at Celtic. But again, it helps him that Turnbull's injured, I think, until March. So that should give Hatate a run into the team. Idiguchi, there is still a space, I'd suppose, for Idiguchi at the base of that midfield. And I mean, there is a really good player in Idiguchi. So if he starts well, if he trains well, then there's no reason to suggest that he can't make it into that team. But Celtic play a lot of games, so I expect all three of them to get a good amount of game time, at least for this season, then moving on into the future.
And on your several appearances on Celtic podcasts and other media channels in the time since these three transfers were announced, I mean, was there a real excitement this time about these three players going over? I mean, I think at first, obviously, when Ange Postecoglou was announced, and then when Furuhashi made the move, I think there was a lot of uncertainty and to put it frank, a lot of Celtic people thought that Furuhashi wasn't going to make the grade over there, did they? So was there a little bit of I told you so coming from you, and was there real excitement about how these three might also fit in over there?
I don't think I was quite like saying that, but there's definitely a change in feeling, I think, from Celtic supporters who were wary, let's say, at the best possible terms of Postecoglou coming in and Furuhashi. Really, they didn't know much about them, but Postecoglou's won a trophy already. Furuhashi has been arguably their best player this season, so completely they're they've just turned around on that, and there's a real excitement from the people that I've spoken to about all three of these. I mean, Maeda, just because of his link up with Postecoglou previously and the amount of goals he scores, it's going to excite anyone. I mean, you just look at his pace on a YouTube clip and everyone will get excited about that. I've tried to, like, Hatate, I think, will long-term be the best of these signings, and I've kind of tried to explain how Kawasaki play, and it's quite similar to the way that Celtic do, and Hatate kind of fills a perfect little gap that Celtic have, and one of those players that will link forward with Furuhashi and Jota and Maeda, whoever they play up front there at Celtic. And even for Ideguchi, I mean, I wasn't as positive on Ideguchi because last season I don't think he played very well, but there's still definitely a player in there, and they've seen enough about him, and they do believe that Postecoglou will get the best out of him. They really do seem to be fully behind Ange Postecoglou, and there is a real belief that he can get the best out of players. So it does seem really positive at the moment from Celtic supporters towards these three Japanese players, and Furuhashi and Postecoglou are already there.
All right, then. So, yeah, very interested to see how they get on in their debuts, as you say, against Hibs on Monday night / Tuesday morning Japan time. And obviously, you'll know the result of that game and whether they featured at all by the time this podcast is released, listeners. So we mentioned just a few moments ago that, yeah, it was a bit of a highway out of the J-League. Well, one to Celtic and the other to Belgium, where a number of established J-Leaguers have made the move over the winter. And well, there was a bit of a rush on Japanese defenders, wasn't there, Sam? Firstly, from Kashima Antlers, Koki Machida has made a loan move to USG, the same club as Kaoru Mitoma, formerly, of course, of Kawasaki. Really, the only significant in from Europe back into the country also happened at Kashima, wasn't it, Sam, with Yuma Suzuki coming back from St. Truiden. Elsewhere, Daiki Hashioka's loan was turned into a full transfer from Urawa to St. Truiden, and from FC Tokyo, Tsuyoshi Watanabe has made a full transfer to Kortrijk, another Belgium club, while a really interesting one from Cerezo Osaka, Tatsuhiro Sakamoto, one of the favourites of us over the past couple of years, the exciting Cerezo winger. He's made a loan move to Ustende. So it's lots happening from J-League is moving over to Belgium in the winter.
Yeah, it's definitely becoming a hotbed, almost like the Germany and the Bundesliga, maybe even the second division Germany was maybe 5-10 years ago. And they've obviously seen Junya Ito, who's done very well there. They've seen Karim Mutoma in his short time at Union has done very well, and St. Truiden's has been this kind of Japanese team kind of playing in Belgium anyway. So there's definitely a lot of looking over towards Japan. They see that as a viable market. And I think for Japanese players, the Belgian league kind of suits them pretty well as well. It's not quite as physical as you might get in other leagues. It's quite open. It's good for attackers. They kind of given a little bit more space than you would in certain other leagues. And they're kind of really attacking league. So it's a nice one, especially for Sakamoto. I think it might be slightly more difficult going in as a defender because you're left a little bit more open for a lot of these teams. So Machida might take a little while to get going. Same with Watanabe. But I think in general, I think you can't really knock moves to Belgium. I think they're really nice kind of first points of call for Japanese players going over to Europe.
Yeah, it should be really interesting to see how they get on. What about Suzuki then? They're heading back to Antlers, very enigmatic player, of course, during his time in his first spell with Antlers, obviously capable of the absolute sublime and an absolutely prolific striker on his day, returning with his tail between his legs. Was there some drama happening behind the scenes, perhaps in terms of him wanting to come back to Japan, or was his hand kind of forced on this occasion, do you think?
It's a really interesting situation because last season in Belgium, he scored 17 and 34, had a terrific season, and he was on the brink of a move. I think it was to Italy. It was where he was trying to go, and St. Truiden blocked that move, and he kind of threw Toys out of the pram and has not really been happy ever since. He did make come back into the squad, but hasn't really played well this year. And they've kind of moved him on, and he just seems to have just gone back to Japan. For it's a weird one. No one really expected him to go back to Japan. He definitely had his sights set on a European move. So, yeah, it's a really weird one. I don't know if it's just going to be a short-term thing back at Kashima, because I think he has shown the quality to play in Europe, and that 17-goal season was very good for a pretty average side in Belgium. But, yeah, he's definitely got a few attitude issues that need to be ironed out before he necessarily makes it. But for Kashima, for however long they have him, if they can get him focused, they've got themselves a terrific striker.
Most definitely. And, well, they've managed to hang on to Ryotaro Araki, haven't they, as well? So when I guess there might have been some eagles circling for him this winter. So, yeah, very interesting to see how Suzuki slots back in. And, yeah, basically if he can pick up where he left off before he headed over to St. Truiden in the first place. All right, well, yeah, we know that Daizen Maeda has left F. Marinos to join Celtic, Sam, and we'd already found out before the end of our podcast in 2021 that Tiraton was returning to Thailand. But for me, while all of these transfers we talked about so far have their own levels of intrigue, for me, the most interesting transfer out of the J-League to a foreign league over the winter is the move of Jun Amano from Yokohama F. Marinos, the club where he has spent 8 years and made over 150 league appearances. Jun Amano has decided to make a move over, he's jumped over the pond to Ulsan Hyundai of South Korea, of course, a perennial powerhouse in the K-League. And, this is a fascinating move for me. I guess Amano just fancied a new challenge after, he'd become part of the furniture, obviously, at the Nissan Stadium in his time there. And, this is going to be really interesting to see how he gets on over in the K-League.
Yeah, really interesting move. I think it's a good one for Ulsan because, I mean, Jun Amano is a terrific player. He's got a wonderful technique, his delivery with his either foot. I mean, he's fantastic. The only thing he's found at F. Marinos is kind of in his favoured position. He's just been behind Marcos Jr. And he's a difficult player to oust from the team. So he kind of wants a bit of first-team football. He's done that previously. He had that spell there over in Belgium. I think he went summer of 2019 for a year at Lokeren. And, yeah, obviously fancies a bit of first-team football. He thinks he might be able to get it more likely at Ulsan. And, good luck to him. He's joining a very, very good team. One of the favourites they'll be for the ACL. So, yeah, I think that it's a good move for both of them. It's not great for F. Marinos. It's another very good player that they're losing. But, yeah, I can understand completely why Jun Amano wants to try his luck elsewhere. And, yeah, good luck to him.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. And, if Ulsan can negotiate their ACL playoff game, they will join Kawasaki's group in the Asian Champions League. So, Amano will come up against some familiar foes in the ACL, provided that Ulsan win their playoff, which is, we don't want to say it's a near certainty, but yes, they probably will be making it through to the group stage. And we might have a quick chat about the results of that draw that was conducted earlier on Monday before we finish up. Sam, I wanted to segue on next to some of the major transfers. But these are domestic ones, players that have moved from the four relegated clubs, but have remained in J1. So, of course, if you need a refresher, Sendai, Yokohama FC, Tokushima and Oita were the four clubs relegated back to J2 at the end of the 2021 season. And some of them have been picked over fairly extensively. And, we just obviously wanted to pick out the major names that we think could have an impact in their new top flight clubs this season. So if we begin with the Sendai Sam, obviously, yes, dreams do come true. And we mentioned it before we finished up in 2021. Sendai's Polish goalkeeper, Jakub Slavik, has made the move to FC Tokyo. And, well, yeah, there's no one happier about that news than me. Although, obviously, Go Hatano and previously Akihiro Hayashi had given Tokyo good service between the sticks. Well, frankly, there's no comparison. And, yeah, I'm just absolutely rapt to see what Slovic can do in, well, it won't be a red and blue shirt because he's a keeper. It'd probably be a pink or an orange shirt. But, yeah, I'm really excited to have him at the club.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong, I don't think, with Jakub Slavik as your goalkeeper. He's one of the best that there's been in the league for the last couple of years. I know Go Hatano has got potential, but I think when Slavik comes available, you have to go for him. I think, yeah, he's just does everything very, very well. There's slight concerns maybe with distribution, but I'm sure he can work on that. But I think you're 100% a better defence with Jakub Slavik behind you. So, yeah, terrific signing, I think, that for FC Tokyo.
Yes, indeed. All right. Yeah, you mentioned those distribution problems at the end of last year as well, Sam. But yeah, you won't put me off at all. Yes, yeah. So absolutely rapt about the move. Of course, a lot of players have left to Sendai, and many have arrived as well in the winter. But yes, we'll leave the significant ins and how Sendai might be shaping up for 2022 to John and Stuart on extra time. But yeah, the other a couple of names that have left the club but remained in J1 that I wanted to mention, Sam, was the midfielder Riki Uehara, who was on loan from Iwata, having spent his first 6 years as a pro with them, and after 1 year with Sendai, returns there. And, well, Sendai have also been accommodating to the other promoted club. They've sold Hisashi Apia to Kyoto. The young defender, spent 2 years with the Vegalta first team and was a regular last year, making 29 league appearances. So obviously Uehara and Apia are at slightly different ends of the experience scale. But how do you think they might be able to contribute, Uehara in midfield for Iwata and then Apia perhaps as a squad defender for Kyoto? Or do you think he might be pushing for a first team spot?
I think at the start it'd be just a squad defender. I mean, there are good things about him. I think, yeah, he's got a few decent attributes. He's looked fairly comfortable on the ball. He's grown, I suppose. He's not kind of thrown into the frying pan, I suppose, at Sendai when you're doing a lot of defending, and he's kind of come through that. I mean, there is a gap, I suppose, at Kyoto with Jordi Boysh leaving, and you think maybe he could come into that, but I think maybe he'll just start off as kind of backup, but potentially ease his way into that squad. And Uehara, I think Jubilo have got reasonable midfield options. I'm sure Yasuhito Endo is going to be trying to start as many games as possible there. He did very well on loan last year. They've still got, yeah, decent options in midfield. It's kind of just, I look at the Jubilo squad and it just looks like the same squad that got relegated last season. So I'm not sure, even with Uehara coming back in, I don't think it necessarily pushes them too high. I don't think it makes too much of a difference, but he will be a useful squad player, and he played fairly well for Vegalta last year.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, you mentioned Jordi Boysh there. I mean, does he just not fancy J1 at all? I mean, he was at Tokushima before they got promoted, weren't they? Wasn't he? So, yeah, interesting that he would leave Kyoto as they make their return to the top flight. But I think he's headed over to Okayama, hasn't he? So I'm sure it's lovely in the summertime, so he'll have a cracking time there at Fagiano. But would have been interesting to see him up in J1. Obviously the most significant transfer of the entire off-season was the 54-year-old Kazuyoshi Miura's loan move to Suzuka Point Getters of the JFL, Sam. Interesting Yokohama FC didn't want to let Kazu go on a free transfer. That leaves the window open, of course, for them to bring him back if they get promoted back to J1, as I'm sure he'll be fit and raring to go at the start of next season as well, at the ripe old age of 55. But otherwise, Yokohama FC have... Well, as I guess you'd expect, their best players have been picked off. And, the most exciting attacking player, Yusuke Matsuo, and their rock in central midfield, Tatsuki Seko, have both made really interesting looking moves.
Yeah, and I think, as you say, they were both destined to leave. And I think Matsuo especially, I think we saw him going to Reds from a long way away. I think that was always on the cards. It's a terrific signing for Reds. Matsuo, we've gone on about him for two seasons now. He was definitely the standout player, I'd say, for Yokohama, especially when he was on it. He's terrific dribbler with the ball, good finish as well. And I think he slots in straight away into that Urawa side. And then Tatsuki Seko, yeah, he was their most consistent player last season, the only one who kind of played well during that horrendous first half of the season where they were just dreadful. So he'll come in at Kawasaki. There's a lot of good players in that midfield. It's not going to find it easy to break in, but Oniki has shown that he is willing to play younger players, and Seko will be given a good opportunity. So, and he gets to learn from the best in Ryota Oshima, so I'm sure he'll be absolutely fine.
Yes, indeed. Well, yes, Matsuo moving to Reds, and yes, the Urawa Rebs website graphic said welcome back to Reds, because of course Matsuo was a junior youth and a youth product at Urawa. Of course, famously scored that brilliant brace against Reds at Saitama Stadium when Yokohama FC shocked Urawa 2-0 in 2020. Yes, a Saitama native, and a really exciting move for him. We wondered at points last season, Sam, how Ricardo Rodriguez was going to fit Kasper Juncker, Ataro Esaka, Yoshio Koizumi, etc., into this team. So for you, does Matsuo just go straight in on the left-hand side of the front three?
Yeah, I think so, because they've let Yuruki go to Kobe, so that frees up a decent space on that left wing, so I'm sure that'll be where he goes. There's a lot of options, as you say, at Reds. I mean, Akimoto could play out there. They've still got Sekine, they've still got Okubo there, so there's lots of options, but I think Matsuo, I think, is just a step above those players, and I think he looks perfect for that left wing position. But yeah, Rodriguez has a lot of head scratching decisions to make, because they've assembled a really deep squad there.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. All right, yeah, so Seko to Kawasaki is another really interesting move. We'll see how he fits in. Obviously, Frontale going to have a lot of games to play this season. And yes, Toru Uniki likes to make a full use of his squad, of course. The other three outs from Yokohama FC that I had written down, Sam, was Yota Maejima moving to Fukuoka, Yutaro Hakamata, the defender, to Iwata, the promoted team, picking off the scraps from the relegated teams. And indeed, they've taken Ryo Germain, the forward from Yokohama FC, as well. So, Iwata obviously doing quite a lot of shopping from the relegated teams. What about Maejima then? We've spoken about how Fukuoka might try to build on their terrific season last year and consolidate themselves in the top half of J1. Does Maejima contribute to them going some way to doing that, do you think?
It's kind of plugging the gap that's left by Salomonson leaving. I think he'll be a decent option at right back. He played kind of in and out of that Yokohama FC side last season, kind of switching with Maginio. But I quite liked him whenever I did see him. I think he's solid. I don't think he's in any way an improvement on Salomonson, but I think they'd have been hard-pressed to find a better right-back than Salomonson. So I think it's a decent signing for Avispa. It's pretty solid, and he can battle it out there for that position. It's a reasonable signing. Hopefully he does well. He's still only 24, so there's definitely room for improvement. But yeah, between him and Yuzawa, I think they're fine. They've probably plugged that gap as well as they were going to.
All right then. So we're moving to Tokushima, who were, of course, the closest to safety at the end of the 2021 season. They've basically lost their engine room, haven't they, Sam? Joel Fujita has moved to Yokohama F Marinos, and Ken Iwao, who is Mr. Vortis, has gone on loan to Reds after 6 years with Tokushima. So basically the heart of Tokushima's midfield has departed. Fujita, a very exciting youngster, Iwao, the grizzled veteran. But yes, he was basically Tokushima's rock for the entire 6 years that he spent with them. And obviously they'll miss Fujita because he's going to be turn into an absolutely terrific central midfielder, I think. But yes, even more than that, they will just miss the presence of Ken Iwao in the center of their midfield, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, they've been absolutely gutted in that position. Suzuki went to Cerezo as well, and Konishi. So I don't even know if they've got any centre midfielders left from what was there last season. But yeah, Iwao is a huge loss. He was just the one player that kind of just ticked them along. He kept them in control and very rarely gave away a pass. And I think, yeah, he goes into Reds. He obviously knows Ricardo Rodriguez and his system. There's quite a young midfield there at Arawa, so he brings that experience. He'll get those players working along. He'll get them used to the system and the way that Rodriguez wants them to play. So I think he's a really kind of a clever loan signing for 1 year just to get those players there, because Reds have got a lot of good young midfielders coming through, but maybe just need a little bit of guidance. And yeah, Iwao will do that for 1 year.
All right. Vortis have lost their goalkeeper as well. The man with the longest surname in J-League history. I think I'm fairly safe in assuming that is indeed the case. Naoto Kami Fukumoto, a much-travelled goalkeeper. And yes, relegation was just too much for him to handle. So he has made the move back up into J1 and will be joining promoted Kyoto. That's an interesting one, Sam. I'm not sure he's necessarily my cup of tea as a goalkeeper, Kami Fukumoto, but that might have a lot to do with him playing for Tokyo Verde for a few seasons. But that's by the by. But do you think he'll step straight into the number one spot at Sanga, or will he will he be fighting for the number one jersey?
It's very much a head scratcher, the whole goalkeeping situation at Kyoto, because they've got a young goalkeeper, Wakahara, who's only 22. Played most of the games last season before an injury, and he looks, there's a good bit of quality to him. So he's there. They've brought in Kami Fukumoto, who will expect to be number one, as he was last year. They've also signed New Zealander, he was at the Olympics with New Zealand, Michael Wood, who's come in, and he will expect to be first choice goalkeeper as well. So they've got a lot of options there, far too many options, in my opinion. I think they've signed another goalkeeper as well, Matsubara, I think, from Thespa. So it's a real shootout as to who is going to keep, have the gloves for Kyoto next season. So I guess competition is good, but I think you can have a bit too much of a good thing.
Yes, fair enough. From the defence, Tokushima have lost to Shota Fukuoka to Gunba Osaka and Diego to Tosu. While, further forward, they've lost to Takeru Kishimoto to Shimizu. So, obviously, we're going to be talking about all of these clubs in detail in their own section of our preview podcast. But, as for Tokushima, as a whole, they've pretty much, as you said yourself, they've been pretty much gutted, haven't they? And, Fukuoka, Diego, and indeed Kishimoto, just to add to the carnage.
Yeah, the J-Talk Extra Time boys are going to have a lot to talk about, I suppose, with the outs there. You have those, and you've got Kakita and Miyashiro both on loan. They've gone, so almost the entire first 11 seems to have disappeared from Tokushima. And yeah, it's some good pickups, I think. I think Kishimoto is the best one. I think Shimizu have got a really good player there. I think he was arguably Tokushima's best player last season. Great in both areas. Lot of great engine down at right back, and probably play further forward as well. So yeah, I think that's a really good pickup. But yeah, there are lots of decent players that were available from Tokushima, and the vultures from J1 are definitely circled.
Yes, most definitely. So yeah, Yokohama FC and Tokushima have been fairly heavily picked over. Sendai perhaps not so much, and Oita. I don't know if it's a commentary on the football they played over the past 2 or 3 years or not, Sam. But yeah, basically for my take, the only player who was a regular last season and is likely to be so again in the top flight in 2022 is the central defender Henrique Trevisan, who was on loan from a Portuguese club. That loan expired at the end of the year, and he's now joined FC Tokyo on a full transfer. He made 28 league appearances last season, Trevisan, but I guess he's remembered mostly for his 121st minute goal in the Emperor's Cup semi-final versus Kawasaki that sent that game to penalties. And after the shootout, of course, Oita found themselves in the Emperor's Cup final. So as a Tokyo supporter, yes, we mentioned earlier that Watanabe has left. And although I was, you know, at some point in time, I did have high hopes that he would turn out to, well, be the long-term successor to Masato Morishige as the rock of the FC Tokyo defense, that became clear over the past year, perhaps year and a half, that he wasn't going to quite get to that level, or I didn't think he was going to get to it anytime soon. And the fact that he's decided to make a move to Europe, I guess if you had said that was going to happen 2 years ago, I would have been really disappointed. And but as it is, we might finally see some more regular action from Bruno Uvini. And yes, we might just see Trevisan as Morishige's long-term partner now at the center of the FC Tokyo defense.
Yeah, well, hopefully Albert Puig has found the key to whatever, to the room wherever Bruno Uvini has been kept for the last year. Because, yeah, it'd be good to see a bit more of him. And I think Henrique is a very good signing. He's kind of stood out in that Oita team. There was a bit of quality to him, but he organised that defence as well as he possibly could. He looks decent at every attribute there at the back. And, you could see him slot in next to Masato Morishige. Obviously, you've still got Bruno Uvini. Kimoto came in as well. So you've got reasonable options at the back now. But yeah, Henrique, I think, yeah, he's definitely good enough to slot in to that first team at FC Tokyo.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Puig plumps for at the start of the season, and once he's got all the players into camp and run them through a full pre-season. Speaking of Morishige, he has been confirmed today, Monday, as the FC Tokyo captain for 2022, which is frankly, it's phenomenal news for all Tokyo supporters. It means that Keigo Higashi might no longer be the fixture in the team that he has been for basically the last, he's coming up for 10 years, I think, isn't he, at Tokyo? And, he's played pretty much every week since he's arrived. And, regular listeners certainly know my thoughts on Higashi, and it turns out that going out to have a few beers with the call leader not long after the season finished has not worked out particularly well for Higashi. You're breaking a few protocols and getting your supporters' noses out of joint, and I think that has led to the club deciding that he should no longer continue as captain. And whether Puig just had to rubber stamp that, or whether Puig would have plumped for Morishige as captain himself, I don't think we'll ever really find out the true answers there. But yes, Morishige will lead Tokyo in the new season, and Diego Oliveira has been confirmed as his vice captain. So that's that's another pleasing turn of events, with Leandro also staying on for the new season as well. So maybe things are looking a little bit brighter at FC Tokyo. But didn't really want to spend 2 or 3 minutes talking about them, Sam. But there you go. we welcome Trevisan to the club, and I'm sure he'll welcome the competition to partner Morishige. So all right, we've talked about the major transfers out to mostly to European clubs, and the players who have left relegated clubs but stayed in the top flight. So before we leave this first episode of the new campaign, Sam, we did mention it ever so briefly earlier on, the Asian Champions League draw was done earlier on Monday with I guess if Ulsan can make it through their playoff, as you mentioned earlier, their group with Kawasaki looks arguably the most interesting. But Kobe will have to negotiate a playoff themselves. But otherwise, how are things shaping up for Yokohama F. Marinos, Urawa, and indeed Kobe, if they can make it through that playoff, do you think?
Kind of a mixed bag. It's difficult with the way this Champions League is formatted now, where you've got the top teams are the only ones that are guaranteed to go through, and then it's the three best runner-ups. So you look and see, what are you going to top this the group? Reds have got a fairly nice group, I'd say. Shandong, Lion City Sailors, and then one of Daegu or Buriram. I think they'd expect to come out of that group on top, so I think they'll be pretty satisfied with what they've been given. If Marinos joined up with John Book, is they're not the team you want to join. If only one team gets through, that's a difficult one for them. They... yeah, you might be fighting for a second place finish there, because John Book are traditionally a very strong side, and F. Marinos, as it stands, have been weakened from last season. The other ones, there's a Vietnamese side that I try and pronounce Huang and Gia Lai, and then one of Chang Tun Yatai, an Australian team, or Kaya from the Philippines. So those two teams you'd expect would be easy. So it's a kind of fight, I think, between John Book and F. Marinos, but as their Gamba found out, a fight with John Book could lead you out of the competition. So, yeah, it's maybe slightly difficult for F. Marinos. Kawasaki's group is really difficult, especially if Ulsan get in. JDT are a decent side. And Guangzhou, you're never really sure what you're getting out of the Chinese teams. But if any of the Chinese teams are going to be strong, it will be Guangzhou. So, yeah, we'll see how they are shaping up in April. But it looks a difficult one for Kawasaki as they try and get this monkey off their back and try and do well in the ACL. It's a difficult one. The only benefit is they can't face Ulsan in the first knockout game, so maybe that's a benefit for them. But like Yokohama, it's quite difficult, and yeah, it might be a case where they end up being second and just hope they get through. As for Kobe, obviously they've still got to get through their playoff, but once they get there, Shanghai, again, a bit like Guangzhou, you're not really sure what they're going to be about. But Chiangrai and Kitchi are decent sides for Thailand and Hong Kong, but Kobe would expect, I think, to get through that group first. So I'd say Reds and Kobe will be pretty happy. If Marinos and Kawasaki have got pretty difficult groups.
All right, then. Well, yeah, plenty of ACL excitement to come. And again, if things go ahead as currently scheduled, Kobe will play their playoff on March the 15th, and then the group stage will be played in a centralized location over the course of just over 2 weeks from the middle of April to the start of May. So yes, it's again, everything's up in the air, and as we've discovered over the course of the past two seasons, the AFC have very much had to think on their feet, and they've had to chop and change the schedule a number of times over the past couple of years. So we hope that everything can go ahead as is scheduled this year, and it'll all culminate more than a year from now, Sam, with the final to be played over two legs in February 2023. So we've got a long way to go until then, and as I said, we can just hope that everything passes along as it's currently scheduled to do so. So I don't know if there any other business we need to chat about as we kind of work our way through our first episode of the season and before we dive in to our club by club previews next week.
Maybe a quick look at the Japan national team. Obviously, that squad is going to be announced on Saturday. There's currently a J-League only kind of training camp. They were due to be playing Uzbekistan this week, but that was postponed as Uzbekistan weren't given permission to come into the country. The games will still go ahead between China and Saudi Arabia in a couple of weeks' time. And the squad's going to be interesting. There's a few injury issues. Maya Yoshida, Kyogo Furuhashi and Karen Mitoma are all doubtful going into that squad. And then you had all the mess about with the potential quarantine for the J-League players. And when it was first announced, though, J-League players were going to have to quarantine for 14 days after the final game against Saudi Arabia, which would cause Reds and Kawasaki players to miss the Super Cup. Thankfully, that has now been reduced to 6 days, so those players will now be available. But yeah, that was still quite difficult circumstances. It's a difficult time with COVID and Omicron and all that, but it looks like they've worked a way around it. So we'll see what sort of squad Moriyasu picks on Saturday. And yeah, they're two massive games for Japan's and crucial qualifiers, because the AFC playoff winner has been drawn against the fifth place in CONMEBOL. So yeah, it's a difficult one. You don't want to be third in your group and then potentially facing Chile for a place in the World Cup, or Uruguay or a team like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Yes, I hadn't come across that news, so that's a little bit of a bombshell, and that obviously, as you say, yeah, makes these next two games all the more important for Hajime Moriyasu and yeah, the squad that he selects on Saturday and will eventually get in to yeah, to start getting them ready for those two games. So I don't know, Sam, would you want to stick your neck out and suggest a couple of bolters that Moriyasu might plump for, especially, as you say, if there are injury concerns over a number of key players? Do you think, he's not one to push the boat out, is he, Moriyasu? So whenever he can, he tends to go with his tried and trusted, but his hand might be forced here. I don't know. Is there a name from left field you can think of that might get a mention in the squad?
I mean, bolters might be pushing it, but I have heard that Shoya Nakajima should be returning for this squad. I can't remember the last time he played for Japan with various injuries and whatnot, but he's got a bit of game time going at Portimonense. Should be a contender at least for that left wing berth, especially if Mitoma and Furuhashi are both injured. So that's probably one. Difficult one. I think you could see Yoshinori Muto as well come back. Obviously, he played very well for Kobe at the end of last season, and he might force himself in. I don't think either of those are bolters, just kind of veterans of the Japan national team, but I think that's as close as you're going to get with Moriyasu in charge.
No, fair enough, and you've gone straight for my heartstrings there with the two former FC Tokyo players, Nakajima and Muto. So, yeah, you wouldn't get any complaints from me if they are selected by the national team boss. And, yeah, we'll wait and see what he plumps for on Saturday, and obviously we'll be chatting about it in next week's episode as we, get ready for the start of the new J1 campaign. We'll be previewing all 18 top-flight clubs over the course of the next 4 weeks. And yes, patrons, stand by your inboxes because, in the middle of the week, towards the end of the week, I'll be putting out a call for questions as, Sam and I, once we decide the first of four or five clubs that we want to preview, we want to get any and all questions that our patrons might have about those teams. If you're thinking about joining up the J-Talk podcast Patreon for the new season, now is surely the best time to do it. You get early access to all of the podcasts, both this flagship show and, of course, the extra time as well as access to the Patreon-only line group that we do mention from time to time here, where you can chat with other patrons, about this league that we all love. Other perks here and there. And, if you're interested, please visit patreon.com/jtalkpod. And, you can join up for as little as $1, £1, 100 yen per month. Whatever your budget stretched to, it's all welcome. And, all support is greatly appreciated. So, Sam, I just wanted to finish with a question without notice. And obviously it's, something that we can revisit throughout the course of our previews. But as we get set to get rolling next week, what are you most looking forward to for the 2022 J1 season? If you don't mind, I'll go first, and I'll tell you that I'm really happy that we have a Shizuoka Derby back in J1 for the first time since 2019. Iwata, of course, relegated at the end of that season and have spent the last two seasons doing their time, as you say, down in J2. So they are back. And Shimizu didn't have the greatest of 2021 seasons, indeed a 2020 either, but they are still in the top flight. So a fixture that is always highly charged, the Shizuoka Derby, Shimizu versus Iwata, is back on the slate this year. And I think the league is all the better for it. What are you looking forward to the most in this new campaign?
Well, I completely agree with you with the Shizuoka Derby, first of all. Those games, when they go to Ekopa as well, there's a real big feel to those. So, yeah, that's great to have those back. And I'm on similar lines with a promoted team, Kyoto Sanga, a kind of famous Japanese team that I've never covered. So I'm really happy to get them into the league. They've got a fantastic new stadium. They've appealed to me by bringing in Genki Omai, which absolutely works for me. So I'm delighted to see them in the league. And I can't wait to start watching a bit more of them. Even when I was in J2, they were never my team. So, yeah, I'm happy to see Kyoto there, and they should add a lot to the league going forward.
That's great. That's a really good shout. Yes, Kyoto had spent more than a decade down in J2. And yes, they are back. And yeah, really looking forward to seeing how they get on. And speaking of Kyoto, our former Sanga correspondent, Nick Bolton. Nick, if you're listening, mate, check your Twitter DMs, because I'm very keen to have a chat with you during our preview episode when we talk about Sanga. So, yes, as I say, Nick, give us a message back if you wouldn't mind, because we would love to chat with you over the course of this preseason and indeed throughout the year as Kyoto get set to, yes, ride again back up in J1 for the first time in, as I said, over a decade. All right, Sam. So, yeah, we've eased ourselves back into it, I think, fairly nicely with some big transfer talk that we had to get through. But, doing our calisthenics and our warm-up exercises, because it all gets going for real next week as we begin to run the rule over these top flight teams. So looking forward to that and to chatting with you also about the national team squad that Mr. Moriyasu will pick. So, looking forward to it for next week.
Yeah, it should be great. I always love these preview podcasts because they're a great four-week spell for me to make a fool of myself with dreadful predictions and get locked into a terrible J-Pred. So, yeah, that's always good. But at least I can deflect on Mr. Moriyasu and some of his stupid picks for the Japan national team.
All right, then. So, yeah, plenty to come in the coming weeks as we get set for the big kickoff, as I said, on Friday, the 18th of February, Kawasaki hosting FC Tokyo. All right, so we'll be back to preview our first group of teams next week. Obviously, Sam and I would like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. As I mentioned earlier, if you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. All right, we'll be back with our first J1 season preview episode next week. Speak to you then. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.